Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, this is the September 28th edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. If you've been listening all week long, you still have a chance, despite the fact that we're at the end of our pledge drive, to go ahead and make that pledge at 217-244-9455 or willpledge.org. Make a donation in support of agricultural programming. And if you're online, make sure you put that in the commentary segment in support of agriculture. If you're calling 217-244-9455, do that as well. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at WILLAG. .org. Our panelists for Commodity Week today include Erin Curtis from Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois, Elaine Cub of Mastering the Grain Markets. She's out of Elkhorn, Nebraska, and Joe Vaklovic from Standard Grain. And Joe, I want to make sure I have this right because you've moved towns on me. You are now in Nashville, Tennessee. Is this right?
That is correct.
How did you like the move to begin with away from Chicago?
I lived in Chicago just about my whole life, aside from 4 years in Champaign. For college, so nice change of scenery.
Well, tell me about the grain stocks report that took place on Friday morning and what you thought of the numbers as they were released by USDA.
Oh, it was bearish. I mean, it was a bearish report across the board relative to expectations, if you were to believe that the expectations were priced in. I mean, the corn number was a good, was it 130 million bushels above expectations? Beans were 45 or 50 above expectations. Wheat was above expectations. All that considered, I mean, markets could have been worse today. Corn is down 8, beans were down 9, wheat was down 4. I think the report just reiterated the idea that we're sitting on more than ample supplies here of all three crops. And yeah, it was a little bit worse than we thought.
USDA Erin Curtis now says that the, and I'm going to roll this forward, that the ending stocks for 2018 or 2017-18 are 438 million bushels for soybeans. We think that's probably what will show up in the October WASDE number. This was up, what, 43 million bushels from the September number, if you put it all together. Does it make much of a difference over time?
Well, it's still going to be a big number for next year. We did see the USDA increase the 2017 bean crop by about 19 million bushels, so it continues to seem like we continue to underestimate the size of the bean crop year over year, at least the last few years anyway. But, you know, that number for next year for 18-19 ending stocks, 845 million bushels. You translate this forward with this increase in old crop stocks, that pushes us up close to that 900 million. So the bearishness in the soybean market continues. It's going to be hard to ignore that over time, that 900 million bushels, and that does not factor in possibility that the bean yield could go up here a little bit in 18-19, and that gets us dangerously close to a billion bushel carryout, which is a large number that this market's going to have to ignore, and seems like 850 beans would still be kind of expensive at a 1 billion bushel carryout if we get that far.
How wide's the basis there at the elevator on the Friday afternoon?
Well, here along the river, in Illinois River, we're, you know, anywhere from 70 to 80 under, something like that, and close to 90 under in some spots. We did see a little bit of improvement this week, Todd, as we've looked for a little bit of beans from St. Louis on up along the river system. The Gulf needs a few quality beans down there, so we did see a little bit of lift in basis along the soybean side here as they search for a little bit of quality beans. Also did see some rain through that southern part of Illinois that kind of slowed harvest going into St. Louis a little bit. But, you know, still remains pretty historically large here with processors here in central Illinois setting, you know, around 50 under or so in the river system, anywhere from 70 to 90 under. So pretty large basis. And once again, that just reminds us that the cash fundamentals are trying to do the work here. The cash is trying to do the fundamental work, I guess I would say, and the futures continue to be, you know, arguably overpriced with the basis having to be as weak as it is.
Neil Lane Cub, that 80 or 90 under, I would think, where you are in Elkhorn, Nebraska, and parts of the Western Corn Belt would sound really pretty decent at this point.
Oh, I'd love it. And, you know, I farm up in South Dakota where new crop basis is like $1.80 under, so I'd love that. You get sort of Midwestern processor level soybean basis for October, November in Iowa, more like $1 under. And I did a deep dive into this compared to last year. Not that necessarily late September of 2017 was normal either, but pretty much everywhere in 2018, late September, basis is about 30 cents cheaper than it was, weaker than it was last year at this time. So it's not just the story of North Dakota and South Dakota and Nebraska and these PNW feeder states. It's everywhere. It's Michigan. It's Illinois. It's everywhere. And I know, and like Aaron mentioned, that you did see that SIF basis pop just a little bit this week, but it really hasn't fed through to your average country elevator bid yet.
From Standard Grain there, Joe, do you think we'll see the Chinese in very much this year to buy, or have they made a real commitment, in your opinion, to stay out of the U.S. market? And where do our beans go if not there?
That's a good question. There's been a lot of chatter here the last couple of weeks, especially in regard to some of the larger export sales that we made recently. We sold some beans to Argentina, which is not normal for this time of year. We sold made a big bean sale to Mexico just this week, which was kind of abnormal. A lot of chatter or talk regarding, you know, the possibility of Chinese involvement behind those purchases. The reality of the situation is USDA is not projecting a massive year-over-year decline in exports. I think on a percentage basis, they're only projecting like a 1 or 2%, maybe it's 3% decline in exports versus last year. Now, normally we see export growth. So not only are we not going to see growth, but we're going to see just a slightly smaller number. The bigger problem that I see here is just overproduction. I mean, we continue to expand acreage. We continue to just expand yield. And we've just gone so many years without any sort of real weather issue or production hiccup. It's all kind of caught up with us here at really a bad time. I mean, this is the worst time that this sort of overproduction could catch up with us, right when we've got this deal going on with China. So I don't know where the beans are going to go. And a lot of analysts believe that China is going to have to buy beans, you know, by hook or by crook. I don't know exactly how this is going to play out. I think it's the biggest wild card in the market right now that I see.
Aaron Curtis, where do you think the beans will go, and what has happened in China as it relates to their usage, the African swine fever, maybe potential of fewer hogs on the marketplace there, and how does all that play out in your opinion?
Well, I think it's going to be a struggle here, and I think Joe's right. I think it's just a big unknown at this point. They continue to read stories, right, of China trying to do what it can to not only increase its own bean production, try to limit the use of soybean meal and some of its hog rations, just trying to do what it can to try to limit some of that need on U.S. soybeans. We are going to see some unusual channels. We've already seen, like Joe mentioned, Argentina buying some soybeans. I think Europe's going to be a bigger player. Canada obviously getting a few more beans from the U.S. as it tries to move beans around into other parts of the world to meet up some of that U.S. demand that we normally are using this time of year. So it's going to be a challenge here as we move forward. I mean, it's right that the USDA expects soybean export demand to be on par for a year ago. But, with these yields we've had and phenomenal yields again this year, it's just going to continues to catch up to the balance sheet. But, at some point, hopefully, this is probably more hope at this point that we get some sort of trade solution with China and we can start seeing a few beans move that way. But until that happens, it's going to continue to hang over the market, and that unknown is going to continue to keep buyers to the sidelines, especially after this recent rally we've had.
Elaine Cubb, when we take a look at the numbers in the grain stocks figures for corn, we always think about the feed and residual number. Can you go through maybe some of the livestock figures? There was a hogs and pigs report yesterday, what the cattle inventories look like, and how that feed and residual number turned out for the grain stocks figure in this fourth quarter for me.
Yeah, so actually that hogs and pigs report and the cattle on feed report both made, traders go into today's grain stocks report expecting to see pretty good corn disappearance. I can't think of the numbers right off the top of my head, but the swine herd was growing by, 3 or 4% at least, and that's been known here for the past couple of years. Cattle on feed figures were much better in August than folks were expecting to see. So, yeah, I think it was a big surprise, or a surprise to me anyway, that we didn't see better corn disappearance. I mean, it was down, you know, 100 million bushels compared to what it should have been or what was expected to see. And diving even deeper into that, the other thing that sort of struck me in the corn grain stocks report here today was how little corn was on farms compared to usual or compared to last year. You know, they said the on-farm corn position was down 21% from a year earlier. But if you look right in the heart of the Midwest or there in Illinois, it was down more like 25%. And I don't know if that was just a function of farmers doing a better job of getting rid of that grain by September 1st. You know, we've learned here, we've had a couple of big crops in a row, and perhaps farmers became more proactive about getting that grain moved in the summer. But I was, you know, that just struck me, and I can't fully explain that away. And I kind of wondered what Joe and Aaron made of that one, too.
Any thoughts, Aaron?
Well, I think we did see the farmer become a little more proactive seller this year than what we've seen in years past. We went into the summer months, previous two summers, with the farmer having a lot of corn still to sell. And he was much more proactive in just looking at, you know, new crop or just inventory on the books here as we went into the summer, and it was down from what we've seen in past years. So, you know, it just almost felt like the farmer wasn't going to try to make that same mistake twice and go into the summer with, you know, that quite as much grain on hand. So we did see quite a bit of grain, more grain moving prior to the summer than what we've seen the last couple of years. But we still did, even with that being said, there was still plenty of grain moving here as we moved into the summer months from the farmer, so he still had quite a bit to move, but it felt like it was less than what we've seen in previous years, just because they were much more proactive of selling stuff here in that March through May time frame.
USDA saying 2.14 billion bushels of corn were on hand on farm, a portion of that 620 million, and 1.52 billion bushels would be off farm. Aaron, I want to stay with you because you mentioned that there was a bigger drain in Illinois than had been previous years. Can you see that, do you think, in the basis levels for corn in the area?
We haven't seen it much. Obviously, bean basis or corn basis continues to be pretty weak as well, despite the fact that we have a, you know, pretty good demand story building on corn. We've seen export demand obviously pick up here in the recent few weeks, and we expect that to be a continued bright spot here as we move forward. You know, ethanol margins are struggling a little bit, but expected ethanol grind to continue to be pretty strong this year. We haven't seen a lot of much in the way of basis improvement. Did see a little perk up in the river here this week, but still continues to be pretty weak, and would expect that to continue here as we move through harvest. Here in Illinois, anyway, the producer has been much more active on corn harvest than soybeans. Soybeans continue to be hard to cut, just not getting quite fits, and farmer continues to go after this dry corn. You know, we got moistures here in the mid-central Illinois down in that 15 to 18 area, so they just continue to go after it. And, you know, probably through this central belt of Illinois, we're 70-75% done on corn and probably only about 30-40% done on soybeans. So that's going to continue to keep corn basis a little bit on the weak side here as both the farmer and the elevator try to make room for this corn crop. We expect as demand continues to be the bright spot here after harvest, some opportunities for some basis improvement. But right now, Todd, things are, you know, continue to be on the weak side.
Joe, what are you telling clientele to do with unpriced corn and soybean bushels?
You want to avoid any sales at all costs this time of year. I mean, this year, for sure, this year is different because we've got this China thing. But in a lot of respects, this year is very similar to past years in that we followed a very normal seasonal path lower. We posted our high maybe slightly earlier than normal, but we've seen that the normal late summer into fall sell-off through August, through September, weak markets. Historically, you'll post some sort of harvest low around October 1st, give or take. What I know is that historically, this is a very poor time of year to price corn and soybeans. Can I give you a great reason why the markets are going to go much higher? No, I really can't off the top of my head. But, you know, we trade ranges here. The corn market's traded a range for 4 years now. We've been, you know, essentially spent the vast majority of our time in a range from, you know, 3.25 up to 4.10. We haven't deviated from that range yet this year. We're still kind of in the same ballpark that we've been in. So I guess history, seasonals, we do have a demand story in corn in particular telling me not to make sales. And soybeans, it's a little bit more difficult for me to make that argument just because of the overwhelmingly negative balance sheets and the overwhelmingly negative balance sheet prospects. But at the same time, you're at the bottom of the barrel here in terms of prices and what we've seen the last 10 years. So no, I'm not interested in making sales at all. I'm not interested in making basis decisions. I'm probably, if anything, interested in exploring some type of re-ownership if you have to make sales. Carry in the market is phenomenal for both markets. That's the one thing that's in your favor right now. So this is a good time to do nothing.
Elaine Cubb, would you agree?
Absolutely. And I'll expand on that a little bit, that Joe is mentioning that carry, especially in the soybean market, there's like something like 26, 27 cents between the November and the March 2019 contract. And ordinarily that would come with this disclaimer that in order for a farmer to capture that carry, he's got to have a short futures hedge on now. But nobody wants to be selling short soybean futures at 8:45. So just don't do it. Yeah, I'm with Joe. Don't sell soybeans right now. And the play here is just a pure speculative play that, yes, of course, those prices could go lower. We saw that today. We got a big bearish report. Prices went down. It is possible that that has sparked a trend that will last for the next month or so, and soybeans could retest their contract lows. I'm not saying that soybean prices or soybean futures couldn't get worse. But yeah, you don't want to be selling those futures. You just want to be speculating that at some point they'll have to get better. But then the other problem is that you don't want to go be putting those soybeans on storage or on DP at your local elevator, because who knows how long that speculative play for basis to improve or for the futures market to improve. That could take a very long time, and you don't want to be paying DP charges for the next 4, 5, 6, 18 months. I don't know how long this is going to take. And so then that's a whole new range of problems if you're going to be storing soybeans on farm longer than you're used to storing soybeans.
Aaron, I may as well get your advice as well.
Well, I'm friendly to the corn market, so I would say be patient on corn. Beans, a little bit of a different animal there. Just it's hard to see a lot of upside moving forward on beans. I think you got to factor in your payment you're going to receive here this fall, if you're getting one, and I think you got to factor that into some of your decision as well. I think naturally, after harvest is done, we should see some basis improvement. I think it'll be somewhat limited on soybeans. You may be able to pick up a few cents there, but I think the upside would be somewhat limited on soybeans. So I think you got to start doing the math on your yields on some of these soybeans, the price, factor in your payment, and if that's a positive, I think you got to look at selling them, but I'm going to try to be a little patient here on corn.
Are you factoring in 82.5 cents or more than that?
82.5 cents right now, and then I would say anything above that, if we get something in December, is bonus money at that point, Todd.
So only that which you know about, and then in December we'll learn more and how they might put USDA, that is, and the Trump administration might spread that out from the eastern to the western Corn Belt, dependent on basis and whatever factors that they deem necessary. What's our next big point of contention once we get maybe, I suppose, to the October numbers? Do we expect anything to change in the way of the reported acreage, Elaine Cubb, at all?
Not necessarily, but I think a moving figure that will affect global soybean prices is the changes in Brazilian acreage. So they're just getting started planting, and I think that was part of the reason why we almost saw soybean prices go up this week. They're only down 2 cents for the week, but they were up for most of the week, and part of that was the hot weather. So you're starting to get a weather market in Brazil and worries about, or, you know, just guesses about whether or not Brazilian farmers, they're not getting the crazy higher prices that they received for this past crop in the past few months at their ports. Those are not being offered for their 2019 prices yet, because China, for instance, knows they don't have the big competition from the U.S. price-wise. So Brazilian soybean acreage, I think that one's going to be up in the air, certainly over the next couple of months.
Anything that you see fundamentally that might be changing, Aaron, or that we should watch in the future specifically?
Yeah, October 11th crop report. At this point, would expect corn yield to come down just a touch, just to, from some of the variability that we've heard on corn yields. Bean yield probably goes up a little bit, so we'll see if that's a wash by the time we get there or not. But you know, the big wild card in soybeans is going to continue to be Chinese relations. So, I mean, anything that can change there in a moment's notice. So as we kind of approach election time frame, and if we get some talks going either before or after that, I think that's going to be key here for the winter on soybeans. And then, of course, corn demand is going to be a positive, I think. Export demand is going to continue to be a bright spot for corn. So continue to watch those weekly export sales numbers, and hopefully we continue to see some pretty good business coming out of the United States here this winter.
And finally, Joe Vaclavic, we have not talked about NAFTA. That's not been finished up. Will that be a problem for corn next week?
I don't think so necessarily. I mean, we've had a chatter every single day about NAFTA, and same goes for the China thing. I mean, there's rhetoric and back and forth talk, and you know, through the news wires and through the media every day. I just don't know if it's had that big of an impact on the market. I feel like the market has kind of brushed that under the table in favor of more glamorous headlines, you know, things with China, things with stocks, things with yield. So I don't know. I hope we get it wrapped up. I think we will get it wrapped up. It's just been a lot more difficult than a lot of people expected.
Speaking of wrapping up, I think we'll do that now. Lane Cubb, we'll start with you and get a final word for this September the 28th edition of Commodity Week. Elaine?
Well, these September, end of September reports generally don't have big daily moves, but they have sometimes been the start of a month-long trend. So I think we'll have to wait and see if Monday, you know, continues this pattern.
Aaron Curtis of Midco.
Continue to keep an eye on your cost of production and your yield revenue generation here as we move forward, and see if that'll help make some decisions on whether or not you should be pricing some crop here, especially on soybeans.
And Joe Vaclavic from Standard Grain.
When I was a young man in the commodity business, a older man told me that the best bull markets start with the biggest carryouts. And this soybean market is going to probably have the biggest carryout that most of us have ever seen in our careers after this 18-19 marketing year. So I hope he's right.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets out of Elkhorn, Nebraska, Joe Vaclavic from Standard Grain, he's in Nashville, Tennessee, and Aaron Curtis of Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois. Commodity Week, of course, can be funded in part by you, because we're in the middle of our fund drive at willpledge.org or 217-244-9455. That's 217-244-9455 to make your pledge of financial support to this programming content. It's important for you to do if you listen to Commodity Week or the rest of our agricultural programming on the home station at Illinois Public Media all day long, including the closing market report. You know that we bring as much information as we can to you about the commodity markets in Chicago, along with production across the planet in Argentina and Brazil, China, Ukraine, Eastern Europe, Western Europe, Australia, and South Africa. And we do that in terms of what their production is like, what their expectations might be, what the weather forecasts are for those regions and for right here in the Midwest. If that really does make a difference to you, right now is the time to call. 217-244-9455 is the number. WillPledge.org. In either case, make sure that you let them know you're pledging in support of agricultural programming. Thanks for listening to Commodity Week. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media. This is Public Radio from WILL AM 580, WILL FM 90.9. It's HD3 in Urbana. You have a great weekend. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.